Welcome to Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. I'm Scott Gregory, sitting in today for John Schumann. Most of us are aware of PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a common psychiatric affliction that people who've experienced trauma can suffer from. PTSD involves a sense of hypervigilance, or heightened anxiety with startle response, excess fear, and often flashbacks to the source of trauma. Contrast that with a different, perhaps more subtle condition known as moral injury. Similarities between PTSD and moral injury include anxiety, depression, and even nightmares, but moral injury encompasses regret, grief, and shame, and, if properly diagnosed and treated, involves different conversations and insights to help the wounded feel more healthy. Both PTSD and moral injury commonly occur in soldiers, but any frontline caregiver or first responder can also suffer from both conditions. Our guests today are Dr. Irv Janssen and Jim Lyle. Dr. Janssen is a retired psychiatrist and medical administrator who for years has served on the board of Tulsa's Community Service Council. He's also a veteran, having served as a naval medical officer both active and in reserve for decades. Through his work at the council, he met longtime associate director and U.S. Army veteran Jim Lyle, who retired after a three-decade career at the council and has now joined the board there along with his volunteer commitments with veterans at the Community Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma and Tulsa's Coffee Bunker, which serves as a support space for veterans. Together, Dr. Janssen and Lyle work to support those suffering from moral injury and to further the community's understanding of this phenomenon. And they're both in conversation today with Dr. John Schumann on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday.
Irv Janssen, Jim Lyle, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start by having, Irv, you define what moral injury is.
Moral injury is something that's been around for years and years, a long time, but recently has come under much more review because of the most recent struggles we've had, including all the way back to Vietnam. It's an injury to the conscience. Having done something that goes against your basic values, and this starts to bother and eat away at you.
Like a lot of folks that you guys have spoken with, I think I'd never really heard of moral injury before or framed this way. And so I think as a culture, we're pretty aware of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. We've had so many active military obligations over the last couple of decades now, and plus going back to where both of you served in the Vietnam era. But PTSD, we think of people who have high anxiety or they get triggered fairly easily from sudden responses and things like that. But this is different. Moral injury, I think, Irv, you were telling me that PTSD has a diagnostic code. It's something the medical establishment's fairly familiar with. But moral injury doesn't have that type of a code.
That's correct.
So how is it different than PTSD?
PTSD is a fear-based response, and if one thinks about the brain, that's a midbrain response. Moral injury comes out of thinking and introspection, recognizing that you've done something that does not match your moral standards, and that's a cortical response, not a midbrain response. So even in the brain, it shows up in different places.
So there's some consciousness involved in it if it's
very
coming
much
from the cortex. And Jim Lyle, you were an Army veteran in the Vietnam era in active duty, and you were telling me that you were in combat in the jungle, actually, and in something you taught me about called the Second Tet, so not the big Tet Offensive we've heard a lot about in the Vietnam military history, but something called the Second Tet Offensive. It sounds like your reacclimation to society was rather jarring because when you left combat, there was really no buffer. I mean, you just kind of went from the jungle of Vietnam almost right back to Cincinnati, where you grew up and where you lived.
Yes, think of me as a 20-year-old and being raised in a very nice middle-class home, having values of caring about other people, caring about myself, being drafted, going into the military, experiencing their training and being prepared to fight, but returning to a country that was at times unforgiving toward Vietnam veterans and perhaps holding them responsible for the negative outcomes of that war. I was fortunate to have a good family that supported me upon my return, both immediate and extensive. And I also had personal goals. But I will admit that I also had this feeling that something significant had changed in my life. I felt a lot of loss of youth because the military combat experience was so dramatically different. And I can even think back, maybe by the time I was there for 3 or 4 months, it was like living in a different world, and coming back to the United States was almost a fantasy.
So how is moral injury discovered or diagnosed? First of all, my understanding is what you've taught me, that there are some words that people will use in reflecting that help us better understand when someone may be suffering from a moral injury.
I think it's important to keep in mind that, since you mentioned PTSD, that PTSD and moral injury share some symptoms in common, which is what makes it really difficult, because there are those who then get treated for PTSD but don't touch the moral injury. For example, depression, sleep disorders can be found in both. So that's an important thing to keep in mind, especially for clinical people, that they may be missing moral injury. I always say, if somebody comes in with a diagnosis of PTSD, you have to think of moral injury as a part of your differential diagnosis. So to that extent, they're different. And you have to listen carefully, because people don't automatically say, I've got moral injury, especially they don't know what it is. But a situation over a cup of coffee, somebody says, you know, I think back to my military service and I regret that that starts an open door. And how much you can get at any one time in exploring that depends. It's a process. It's not an event. And I've always said more of the therapy for moral injury will happen over a cup of coffee by talking than any clinical office, because it's a process of talking and sharing.
Does that imply then that we have, I know there are a number of medications available for PTSD, but that there really aren't necessarily so for moral injury, that it's something that's just better treated with talk therapy or just talking and unburdening the self?
Talking is a big factor. If, let's say, the presenting symptom, now getting into more of a clinical situation, presenting symptom is depression, obviously we have good antidepressants at this point. But giving antidepressant without looking at the issues that are behind the depression, such as moral injury, it will not heal. And that's one of the problems in treating PTSD. If you're treating depression, you go through one antidepressant after another because you're missing the core cause issue of moral injury.
And one of the reasons that you gentlemen are so involved with this topic is because, as veterans yourselves, you found over time, through your work with veterans groups and various kinds of treatment and services for veterans, that there really wasn't so much of a language for this. That in fact, the Veterans Administration, which is the giant government-funded healthcare system specifically for veterans, that many physicians, well, clinicians, it doesn't have to just be doctors, but nurses and other types of therapists, weren't really recognizing moral injury. And so this concept is somewhat, I don't know if alien is the right term, but it was somewhat different. So I guess, how did you gentlemen sort of get involved with this?
I was attending a conference at the VA in Muskogee, and the presenter, who was talking about PTSD, said probably about a brief paragraph on moral injury that was now being explored, which caught my attention, because I'd always had the sense that there was much more to PTSD than what we understood. And I started looking into it, and it was just at that time, this was probably 2009-10, that the literature was starting to come forward with this, especially out of the VA in Boston. And now the literature is really quite extensive, but it was this kind of thing that nobody knew about it, nobody thought about it, in spite of the fact it goes back way, way back, including Civil War, and we hear about these stories, Civil War stories too.
I think as we peeled the onion on the subject matter within our own working groups, there indeed was strong interest from both peer veterans and clergy to investigate the subject further. And the further we investigated, the more interest and the more we learned and saw the necessity of trying to create groups at the VA, or finding places for local veterans to plug in, like the coffee bunker. I think it's really important to note that veterans may be more comfortable talking about moral injury with other veterans. There may be less fear of judgment and misunderstanding, particularly when a combat veteran is speaking to another combat veteran.
I think it's important to understand, too, that the issue of basic training provides an enculturation for the young person coming into the military. That person is forever changed. And I agree with Jim that there is a comfort level speaking with someone who has that sense of that culture, which can be a little disquieting. Some of the individuals come home and they probably have a closer working relationship with their combat buddies than they do with their spouse. And that's not easy.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guests today are Jim Lyle, who is the retired associate director at the Community Service Council, who continues in retirement to work and serve veterans, currently in a role doing so at the Community Food Bank, and Irv Jansen, who is a U.S. Navy retired, a medical officer there, from 1966 to 1989, who is on the board of the Community Service Council and a retired child psychiatrist by training. And you gentlemen met really through your mutual work at the Community Service Council that has really spawned a number of great community agencies, many that serve veterans, but of course that handle many other community issues. Jim, you mentioned the coffee bunker. I don't know if all of our listeners are familiar with that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the coffee bunker?
Sure. The coffee bunker is a drop-in center for veterans, and it's located near 41st and Sheridan. It operates on many different hours of the day, but it's a place that any veteran can begin their journey and meeting other veterans. It's a place that families might call if they feel a veteran is in distress and they don't know where to turn. It's a place that veterans can associate with each other. I'm proud to say that it recognizes a new element of the military, and that is a stronger presence of female veterans. I believe our local VA is now treating over 1,000 female veterans, but the coffee bunker does have, at this point in time, a special day of the week, Tuesday, which they call Lady Bunker, and it's dedicated to female military veterans.
I might say something in addition to the coffee that Jim has said about Coffee Bunker, and it goes back to the importance of being able to talk and share. Coffee Bunker was established by the mother of a Marine who died by suicide, and before his death, he had mentioned time and time again there was no place that veterans could get together and talk, especially without alcohol. And it was out of that need that she worked to establish the coffee bunker. It was a way of providing opportunity for veterans to share with veterans.
Irv, you shared a statistic with me that's pretty haunting of how many veterans a day in the U.S. are committing suicide?
20 veterans a day, and it just goes largely unnoticed. The causes, and I might say that 14 out of those 20 have not had any recent contact with the Veterans Administration either. So it's not a Veterans Administration issue. This is the weight that these veterans carry for a variety of reasons that finally they give up.
Irv, if I'm correct, it's veterans of all ages as well.
Yes, veterans of all ages.
So one thing that I think was really interesting about this concept of moral injury is it certainly fits well with what we know about military service, military training, and then post-military experience. But it's not just people in the military who suffer moral injury. I mean, moral injury as a broader concept can afflict people in many other facets of life. And can you give some examples of that?
Well, let me back up for the military experience because Jim highlighted his experience in combat. I remember the story of this was a Navy seaman on board aircraft carrier whose job was to load munitions to the jet planes. And he had no combat experience, but that was his job. But he realized over a period of time that those planes left loaded and came back empty. And those munitions probably killed civilians as well as military. that bothered him. That ended up being a part of moral injury for him. So it happens. You don't even have to be involved with combat. And the other part that we haven't talked about is military sexual trauma, which can also be subsumed under both PTSD and moral injury.
You mentioned military sexual trauma. There are these other hidden wounds of war that you've listed here. We've talked about PTSD and moral injury, but there's traumatic brain injury and military sexual trauma. Can you comment on those?
I can. Traumatic brain injury is probably going to be one of the signature injuries of our current conflicts. It's been highlighted through the NFL because football players end up with traumatic brain injuries over a period of time. In the military, the typical thing is an explosive percussion that happens that in changes in air pressure in milliseconds compress the brain and release the brain, and this causes damage to the brain. Brain cells can't really see this damage in the usual X-ray or MRI, but it hits the entire brain, and especially when it hits the cortex, you lose the chance for memory, for conversation, for insight, introspection. And so to have traumatic brain injury and moral injury or PTSD is a very heavy load.
I think it's worth mentioning that it may be family members who first recognize these difficulties. The veteran, him or herself, may not fully understand traumatic brain injury they've experienced, and the moral injury may be suppressed and showing itself in other ways, such as excessive drinking or erratic driving or other types of behavior that make the family uncomfortable. But I've heard experts in the past say that we really need to educate family members about these topics because they may be the ones on the front line that first recognize the difficulty that the veteran is experiencing.
An extension of that, the behavioral manifestations of any of these often end up in front of the police because of erratic driving or drinking and so forth. And the police then arrest them. We have the Veterans Treatment Court that is designed to help these veterans to divert them from jail or prison into a helping, healing environment. And the Veterans Treatment Court is that. And it's been a real important thing here in Tulsa.
I wasn't aware of that. So there's a Veterans Treatment Court?
That's correct.
That if you, okay, interesting.
Jim can say more.
It's an extension of the Community Service Council and other treatment courts. It's part of the system that treats individuals arrested for excessive drinking or alcohol abuse, excessive drug abuse, associated also with some crime. We are fortunate to have a wonderful judge in Judge Nightingale that is the sitting judge for the Veterans Court and works with the staff who offer an alternative to incarceration. It's typically an 18-month to 24-month process. Many of these individuals could go actually into jail for 6 months and come out and be done with the penalty. They instead elect to take a more therapeutic route. And I believe the benefits, of course, are from hard work and being in the treatment court, a better understanding of oneself, reconciliation with family members, and returning to employment and other conditions that may not be so prevalent once you're incarcerated.
Now, you gentlemen have mentioned earlier in the conversation how important faith communities are when thinking about treatment or recognition of moral injury, but you were maybe unpleasantly surprised to learn that many faith leaders, regardless of type of faith, don't necessarily know or have much training in the way of moral injury, even though this is something that does cut across and may be well beyond military service.
The language of moral injury is really the language of faith, because at the end, it requires a person to forgive oneself for what he or she has felt they did, self-compassion and self-forgiveness. Those are not part of the language of our clinical world. And that's one of the things I think that bothers clinicians. They are suddenly getting into an area that they don't talk about or know the language. And also the clergy, let's say, are unaware of moral injury. once you start talking about it, they clearly catch on because they understand that. And family members, too. I remember, Jim, may I say something about a story you told? This was after we had a workshop early on. Somebody came up and talked to Jim saying, I finally understand what's wrong with my nephew. Because there again, just like in traumatic brain injury, family members can say something is wrong. And a typical thing is they, in returning, are different. They were not like this when they left. And then the question is, what happened? And to some extent, to a large extent, moral injury has to be considered.
Yes, this was a young man who, by our standards, had every advantage, a good family, good education, raised in a faith community, but was struggling mightily after returning from Iraq, and the family simply did not understand and didn't know what to do to help him.
Irv, you were saying that about a third of people diagnosed with PTSD, only a third, I think you said, ever complete therapy for it because there's unrecognized moral injury, which is parcel to the PTSD, but often unrecognized.
Well, the percentage seems very low for those who engage in the treatment process. And the question is, what is it? It's first of all, it's difficult to face, and one has to do that in PTSD, face the trauma that one experienced. And in doing that, that brings up all kinds of other issues, including physiologic reactions of flashbacks. But another factor is, I think, that there are those who present with symptoms of PTSD who actually struggle more with moral injury, and that is not treated as a part of the PTSD program.
Moral injury is really part of these silent wounds of war, but there are other people who suffer from moral injury besides soldiers or ex-soldiers, and what are some of the other folks in other professions we should be thinking about this framework of moral injury with?
Certainly first responders can struggle with this, as an example. The issue, therefore, is much broader than veterans, but we have, by virtue of our background and focus, it's been with veterans.
Yeah, I think anyone can compromise their values to an extent that it haunts them deeply and need or would benefit from conversation with either a therapist or a clergy. And in the case of veterans, other veterans that might have an insight of understanding that someone from a non-military experience could not bring to the conversation.
Jim Lyle, you mentioned that you had watched Ken Burns' Civil War documentary both a while ago and then after you had started to become more aware of the concept of moral injury, and it really changed your perspective on how you viewed the program or even how you thought back to your own military service and the citations you received for bravery. Can you comment on that?
Yes. The Ken Burns series on the Civil War, I think, reflects heavily on family experiences and military experiences of individuals from both the Union and Confederacy. I would urge your listeners, as they may choose to watch that series again, to listen very carefully to the letters that are written and shared during the series, or the comments that are extrapolated from news articles, what families were doing to help their military member. It really, after a time, compared to the first time I watched that and learning more about moral injury, it was like watching an entirely different series. I really saw moral injury much more prevalent, more frequently expressed in that video.
Gentlemen, what are some ways that moral injury can be resolved or healed? We talked a little bit about the importance of talking, conversation, but one of the notes that I have here says that it's a process and not an event. Can you elaborate what you mean by that, Irv?
Well, to speak to the issue of the treatment or healing process, we're fortunate here now in the Muskogee, Tulsa area to have Chaplain Carter Check working with us, and he has developed reconciliation clinics where over an 8 to 12 week period, The issues are reviewed carefully. This is a voluntary program that veterans can enter. And in that healing process and the talking, changes take place, including that sense of self-forgiveness. So to that extent, we would hope that we can recreate some of that same style in our, let's say, civilian community. We're starting to work with clergy, and Chaplain Check is eager to help us do that here.
I might add that Dr. Rita Brock from Bright Seminary at Texas Christian University has done a lot of research on moral injury and believe has evolved what she calls listening circles, where veterans and family members can gather together in a non-judgmental way to speak, to give public voice, if you will, to the experiences. And I did have the experience of sitting in with her on one of those, and I was amazed at the multi-generational effect that moral injury had. People were speaking up about their uncle who served in World War II, or their brother who served in Vietnam, or their son who had just returned from Iraq. And I do believe there are ways that, with a little research, faith communities can engage this subject.
I think I'd like to leave with a definition of moral injury that comes from something you sent me, Irv, from Syracuse University. They have a project there about moral injury, and it states simply, what is moral injury? Moral injury is the damage done to one's conscience or moral compass when that person perpetrates, witnesses, or fails to prevent acts that transgress their own moral and ethical values or codes of conduct. I think that summarizes it pretty well.
It's an excellent summary, and I think that it takes some of the mystery out of it, because we've all done things that we've regretted. So that's not an unfamiliar experience. But the extent and the impact these issues have on an individual have the potential for lifelong struggles, including the issue of ending up in suicide.
Well, for listeners that want further information, we talked about the Coffee Bunker, which is at 6365 East 41st Street. That's near 41st and Sheridan. And they're online at www.coffeebunker.org. They're also on Facebook under Coffee Bunker. There's a Facebook group around moral injury, and there's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week phone contact there, 918-814-7865. But if you need other community resources, or feeling suicidal, or in need of mental health services or veteran services, or many other social services, you can always call 211. That's just 211 on your phone. And that is really a service brought to us by the Community Service Council, where our guests today, Jim Lyle, retired Associate Director of the Community Service Council, and now on their board, and Dr. Irv Jansen, who has been on the Community Service Council board for a number of years, also serves. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It's been great.
Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.